And I think you can do that. I think this group has the power to become a virtual police force. Or not, yeah, police force is not the right word. Consumer, what's, exactly. All right, we're rolling. Okay, so the Mossad. There is a Mossad agent here. Wait a minute. I thought you only drank when I said open source. Well, you know, Peter Drucker talks about what are called monomaniacs, and Rop, who is the other major hacker leader, was telling me he has a 3 to 4 year attention span. Well, I have a 25-year attention span, and I've got 7 years to go. So you'll hear open source again. But about the Mossad, they're very good in a narrow area. They're not as global as CIA, but CIA is more bureaucratic. Anyone trying to work out of an embassy is stupid. And Mossad has one big thing going for it, which is that most Jews consider themselves Jews first and citizens second. And there's a term for them. It's called seyonim. And Jews will be quite happy to accommodate the Mossad with intelligence on their co-workers, with safe houses, with other accommodations, thinking they're being loyal to Israel, and not tell the FBI. Now, the Mossad has run operations in the United States across America. They had a whole bunch of art students basically running scare operations on the Drug Enforcement Administration. There is credible evidence that the Mossad is using drugs into America as a means of financing itself off budget. Okay? Now, I would like to have a really strong counterintelligence service. I will be a class guy. When I catch one of these shitheads, they'll get a first-class seat out of town. No notice. But I think the Mossad, the Chinese, the Germans, even the French, for Christ's sake, are making fools of us. And the FBI is clueless. The FBI has no fucking idea what's going on in this country. And that's sad. All right, sir. We're on.
The first thing I'd like to ask is to inquire if you're familiar with any of George Soros' literature on globalization in international affairs.
I've read and favorably reviewed a couple of his books.
Okay. Then I'd also like to, for you to comment on specifically some of his suggestions on the modifications of the International Economic Organizations and their use of the specific modifications of the use of special drawing rights to increase both the amount of foreign aid given as well as the way it's directed towards it to make it more effective as well as disconnect it from its current usage as to support geopolitical concerns, and how you see that as where you see the direction foreign aid should take and the connection between your suggestions for the modification of intelligence gathering.
When I finish speaking, you will all have master's degree in international economics.
Good.
All right. Soros is a smart guy. I respect him very much. Let me start by saying that Jeffrey Sachs has written a good book called The End of Poverty. He's at Columbia University. He's an advisor to the United Nations. And he's really focused on the end of extreme poverty rather than all poverty. But Jeffrey Sachs has basically said that developmental economics are completely different from the economics that the International Monetary Fund and the World Trade Administration are following. I am a big believer in the concept of immoral capitalism. You have William Grider's book, The Soul of Capitalism, Creating a Path to a Moral Economy. You have John Perkins on, you and I have to talk later. You have John Perkins on Confessions of an Economic Hitman. The bottom line here is that the deck is stacked, not only against other countries outside the G8, but against the publics of those countries and our own country. The whole system is screwed up, just like the United States government is screwed up. And I don't have any easy answers for you other than this. I have two solutions in mind, neither one of which is being listened to by anyone in power who might conceivably implement them, so don't think I'm putting on airs. Number one is I believe we need to use WikiCalc and other forms of actually posting the budget, the real budget, not the false budget that the government presents. The government doesn't show you the real costs of Iraq. It doesn't show you the real costs of the amputees, the real costs of lifetime disability and so forth. We need to actually connect the budget to reality. That's number one. Because if you connect the budget to reality, you will find that we are basically creating slave workers rather than thinkers as a general proposition across the economy. This is lunacy in the information age. The other thought that I have is that we need to take away the unaccountability of corporations, and we need to restore the concept of managers being accountable for their decisions and their actions. Right now, we have too many lawyers in America. We have too many veils that hide people. And the last thing that I'll say on this is that I absolutely believe that C.K. Prahalad should get a Nobel Peace Prize for his book on the fortune at the bottom of the pyramid. He talks about how capitalism today is focused on the top billion who have a net disposable income of $1 trillion a year. And these are the people, I mean, I'm really pissed off at my kids' grandparents. We have 9 TVs in our house. There's something seriously wrong with that. But this is an economy that is built for people who can afford to have disposable refrigerators. Well, C.K. Prahalad has pointed out that the 5 billion people at the bottom of the pyramid have a $4 trillion a year net disposable income, but they buy different things. Their refrigerator in Africa costs $2, and it consists of a ceramic pot inside of another ceramic pot with an air filter buried with an air gap buried in the ground, which will keep meat fresh for 5 days. It's a completely different approach. I earnestly believe that we are within three to seven years, just as a wild ass guess, we're within 3 to 7 years of starting to get it and of starting to show through selective purchasing or non-purchasing and through vocal demand connected by the internet and so forth. What it boils down to is the world is an aquarium. And I'm reminded of that story where you drop one rat one into the aquarium and then eventually they start eating each other. 9/11 was the cesspool reaching our nose. And so we're going to have to take all this seriously. I'm sorry if that doesn't answer your question. Follow up?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Next, sir.
I had a couple of things.
Make love to the microphone.
Okay. I had a couple of things. One was I've read articles recently about a growing trend of basically people at home or just small local organizations of people who go online and browse Arabic language web forums and just take that information and submit it to the CIA or to the FBI and end up, and there have been arrests based on information supplied by these people. What is your opinion on this trend?
Well, first off, I think that those success stories are largely self-promotion by SETI, the woman who wrote Terrorist Hunter under the name Anonymous. She was trained by Steve Emerson. The reality is that neither the FBI nor the CIA are equipped to act on citizen inputs. And 9 out of 10 times, any kind of lead from any citizen is going to be discarded, just like they threw out 2 walk-ins. The system is not built to be networked. The system is built to be a bunker that takes in secrets and puts out very directed stovepipes. The system is not built to be comprehensive. For example, the so-called concept of intelligence sharing with the states, the Department of Homeland Security and CIA National Intelligence Implementation, and you can't blame CIA. I mean, they're less than 2 billion, 3 billion out of the 60 billion, okay? They're the runt in this whole thing. Rumsfeld is sitting on 85% of the intelligence budget. But for states to get intelligence, what's happening is they're building a cement bunker, they're running all these steel pipes in, and they're saying, okay, fine, five or six people can be cleared to read our precious gems, but they have to come from wherever they are to this cement bunker. They have to sign in. They have to read it. They can't make a copy. They can't make notes. They have to sign out. That's how we're going to share intelligence. That's just moronic. Okay? So let me segue that, because you raise an important point. The whole concept of citizen intelligence, and I address this in my second book, The New Craft of Intelligence, and the subtitle of my second book was Public, Personal, and Political. And lest you think I'm trying to sell my books, if you really want a PDF copy of my books, they're on my website for free. But I recommend you buy them from Amazon, because they're much more fun. I mean, they're nice to touch and feel and mark up and everything. I don't make money on these. I publish them myself and give away half of them. The concept of citizen intelligence is very, very important, because what I see out in the world, what I learned on the Office of Information Technology at CIA when I was on a rotational tour, is that it's the data entry problem that breaks governments. And you solve that problem by creating a network where end users generate the content, post the content, structure the content, tag the content, and then the content can be shared. And the CIA is not there. They are, as John Perry Barlow wrote in Forbes long ago, they are the last vestige of the Soviet gulag, okay, with respect to desks and computers and phones and so forth. They're in the Stone Age. So where I think I want to go with this is creating a public intelligence network that gets to the point where I was with the Aspen Brown Commission, which is within six phone calls, I waxed the intelligence community's ass. And they try and ignore that. In fact, we should drink to Wikipedia. I just tried to fix the Wikipedia open source intelligence, and I had these CIA morons. They wanted to pretend that the history of open source intelligence started on the 5th of December, with the appointment of Sergeant Elliot Jardines as the Assistant Deputy Director of National Intelligence for Open Source. And I went in there and I put in the history from 1988 forward, and CIA comes in and deletes it. Okay, hello! So I said, fuck this, and created a table of contents for my website, because I realized nobody was digging into my website. So now I've created a dummy's guide to open source intelligence. I hope you guys all get drunk on this speech. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Citizen intelligence is very important, and I love my concept of a 119 number and a 114 number. With the 119 number going to every cell phone within a 1 mile radius of whatever you see that's a threat, the 114 number goes to a community intelligence center, and if 3 to 5 people are sending in the same information about a guy taking pictures of a nuclear plant, as my 17-year-old would say, that's a clue. Has anyone identified my son yet?
Yes.
All right, where is he?
Back here.
Thanks.
Can I say his name?
Yes.
Patrick.
It is?
Yes.
All right, I promised him that if he was identified, I wouldn't ask him to say anything, and I wouldn't say anything about him. Are you out there?
He's not there anymore. I can
describe
him for you.
All right. Uh-huh. And tell me about his body jewelry.
I think he's had a piercing on his eyebrow or something like that.
You got it. Now, what should the prize be? How about you give me your address, and I'll send you whichever one of my books you want.
Sounds good.
All right. He's been, I'm so proud of him, and I'm proud of you guys. I mean, in many ways, I feel that over the years, I've earned the opportunity to bring my son here, and I think that he's found a kindred spirit among you, although he's been very shy about talking to people, and I think that's a good thing. Another question, sir?
Yes. You mentioned earlier the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, but I'm curious on what you think of the actual accuracy of the story that book presents.
That's a good question. I don't think the guy worked for NSA. NSA doesn't do that kind of stuff. I think there are, is that my son back there? Are you willing to come up here and just, I promise I won't say a word. But I think that, I'd like someone to take a picture of the two of us up here.
Can you just point and click the little button?
All right. Who would have thought? I have one normal child, my third. Yes, sir. Oh, that's beautiful. Send it to me. Do you have my card? Okay. Patrick is the first, and he has my brains and his mother's common sense. My second son is a geek with very long hair who never comes out of his room and is getting very skilled at Warlock or whatever it's called.
World of Warcraft.
And my third son is a wide receiver who is going to be, I bought a 1964 MGB, my second one, and I've promised it to him when he goes to college in 9 years, but he won't need that to be a babe magnet. He's a walking stud at the age of 10. So anyway, good kids with a great mother. Question.
It was about confession.
Oh, Perkins. I think Perkins is no more than 20% fiction. And I think that the 80% that is substance is very real. For example, I am very impressed by the stories he tells about corporations using quasi or pseudo-religious organizations to basically infect native populations with diarrhea and get them to move off mountains that have a lot of gold and things like that. I'm not given to conspiracy theories. I am given to where there's smoke, there's fire. And I have reviewed Perkins' book on Amazon, and I would give it easily an 80% credibility rating. But no, NSA does not hire people like that to go do things.
Just one more thing. You mentioned Operation Northwoods and
Operation what?
Northwind.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something about the plan, including killing American citizens.
Jim Bamford has the complete copy of that declassified plan in the back of his book, Pretext for War.
Yeah. Well, as far as I've seen so far, it included basically preserving the lives of all involved, and no lives were supposed to be killed.
Really? That's fine if that's what you think, but I don't think that's the way it was actually intended. Yeah. It was intended to kill enough people in a gruesome enough way as to arouse the American passion and allow America to go to war.
What is your opinion on Loose Change?
Of who?
Loose Change.
Don't know it.
The documentary?
Haven't seen it.
Okay.
I mean, I can't see everything. I'll keep an eye out for it. Yes, sir.
It's not worth it.
Okay.
Moving off the topic of our government and everything for a moment, what do you think, or what are your opinions on many of the governments in the Middle East and how they're investing their money? I'm thinking mostly of the oil-producing countries,
right,
and a lot of the princes, you know, not producing it, putting it back into the people.
Two quick answers. One, all of those governments are run by elites that are screwing their people. The Saudi Arabian government in particular. The Saudi Arabian government, and Robert Baer is a friend of mine. He's written a couple of really good books, See No Evil, and I forget what the other one is. The Saudi Arabian government is a bunch of sex-crazed... there aren't words to describe them, to include kidnapping blondes, by the way. I've put her name in. No. I'm not. I wouldn't do that to anyone. I'm sorry I can't be here for hacking bitches. No. Sorry, that was so cruel. There's actually a kidnapping ring that will deliver movie starlets by name. And people stupid enough to go to a so-called movie audition by themselves are very primed to be kidnapped. When the UN is talking about other atrocities, they're talking about trading women and children, including perversions with children, and they're talking about kidnapping for body parts and kidnapping for specified sex. I think all of these governments are completely corrupt. I would refer you to a book by Ambassador Palmer called The Real Axis of Evil. If I were God or if I were advising a president, I would have an Undersecretary of State for Democracy with two assistant secretaries, one for the guys that agree to a five-year buyout, 44 dictators, and one for the ones who don't. And I would have an Undersecretary of Defense for peace. What a concept. Now, theoretically, Defense Directive 3000 makes peace equally important as war, but we know that's not true because you don't profit from peace. At least the war profiteers don't. The second comment I would make to you is that for all of Israel's faults, I still condemn the Arab nations for failing to provide Palestinians with land, passports, rights, and support. They simply haven't done it.
I guess where I'm trying to go with this, or my thoughts on it, are what do you think some of the effects will be?
What do I think
mean,
what?
Some of the effects will be. I mean,
if what? They got their shit together?
No, if they run out of their profits. We're running into crisis with oil and all the natural resources and all that shit.
Well,
and where do you think that will go?
Number one, we're running out of oil because 30 years ago we decided not to give a shit at the policy level. There are lots of solutions for oil, but one of them is not tar sands. Canada right now is doing something really stupid. They are pumping water they don't have to get oil out of sands. Okay, so they're doing a water-oil trade-off, which is really stupid. I don't want to be sanguine about this, and I agree with Henry Kissinger when he says Africa is a litmus test for American foreign policy. I believe that nature has a way of curing many ills. There are 59 plagues around the world. One of them is going to hit the Arabs at some point. If I were God, I would say we're going to be free of Arabic oil, and we're going to make nice with Hugo Chavez. Chavez is building a pipeline from Venezuela to Cartagena, which is a refinery town. I live there. My dad was an oil engineer. And that pumps crude oil. And then he's going to pump refined oil to the west coast of Cartagena, completely bypass the Panama Canal. And China is basically going to suck Venezuela dry at the same time that it populates Latin America. Okay? The world is turning Chinese. Russia is going to be Chinese within 20 to 40 years. They're just spreading, okay? We have no strategy for this. We have absolutely no strategy. I think it all comes down to getting a grip on reality. The United States has to understand the real world in all of these languages with historical depth, with cultural sophistication. Bring it on. You know, holy shit. That boy is, I think George Bush has issues with his sexuality. And I think he is belligerent and a bully in part because he's not all man. You heard it here first, or maybe you didn't hear it first. Okay. And we elected the asshole. Okay. Well, all right. You're absolutely right. We did not elect him. We let him steal the election. You're absolutely correct. Okay, and I will never forgive Al Gore for not having the balls to listen to Greg Pabst, who told him before it all came to pass what was going to happen. Greg Pabst broke this story before Election Day, and Gore just didn't want to listen.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's the best I can do. Yes, sir.
I had heard reports from Iraq that the IEDs were set off by cell phones.
That's correct.
Do I have a confirmation on that?
Yes, absolutely.
Why?
In fact, on my website, there's a report that we did on IEDs and cell phone detonation. One of the interesting things is the Chinese are producing millions and millions of what are called long-range base station cell phones. So, for example, a guy who has a 40-acre or 400-acre ranch can set up a base station tied to a landline and then have all kinds of cell phones. There are also now cell phones in mini airplanes, drones.
Why don't they program the cell phone towers, the cell phone systems to just randomly ring all the phones in some random pattern to totally discourage this activity?
We actually did this in Beirut long ago. The Marine Corps had a special team that would go through and would basically set off bombs while they were being made. And it was lots of fun. I think your idea is a good one. One of the problems that we're encountering is that, and the Pakistanis are the very best at this. What they do is they jam or shut off all cell phone coverage along the route of President Musharraf, who knows who's doing this and why. You know, it's certainly a great idea. I don't know if we're doing it or not. We haven't figured out how to do insurgency. I mean, you don't do insurgency in convoys with bulletproof vests and sunglasses. You do it with water trucks and medicine and food and working electricity. And the fact that electricity doesn't work in Beirut today tells me that George Bush doesn't give a shit about stabilizing Iraq. Okay?
Question for you is, where do you feel the UN is in this situation on global politics, and where should they be?
The UN is as close as we get to an effective international organization. It has some pathological deficiencies. The first pathological deficiency is it doesn't have a clue on how to do decision support. And Louise Frechette, the Canadian Deputy Minister of Defense who became the Deputy Secretary General, that was one of her priorities. She still hasn't solved it. The Brahimi report was a very important report on decision support and making the UN effective. Major General Khmer, my friend, I'm going to spend a couple of weeks in the Congo in the G2 tent to see what the UN has at the bottom of the tent after the elections in September. He did his best to move intelligence forward, but right now, thank you, right now the UN lacks intelligence in all senses of the word. The UN has two other major flaws. The first major flaw is that its people have become accustomed to a life of luxury at the headquarters level, and they have become accustomed to using students who like to party as volunteers in the field, as well as detailees from Nigeria who don't read or drive a truck or whatever. Ambassador Oakley has done a good book on the policing the New World Disorder or something like that, and he talks about these issues. The third problem that we have is that the United Nations is like Wikipedia's. The majority of morons rule, except for the Security Council, which has inappropriate veto power. So I think there's some things that need to be changed there, but I would be the first to say, God help me, John Bolton might be the enema they need. And two, I think the UN is all we've got. We need to make it work. Okay?
Thank you.
Hi. I was wondering, I hear a lot about Al-Qaeda, but I was wondering if you could talk a little about...
No, just you don't have to move it, just touch it.
I was wondering if you could talk a little about the white power militias in this country.
Oh, yes.
I heard something on Democracy Now!
Yes.
When they were searching for weapons of mass destruction, and I didn't hear it on any other news source, but that they did find them. And
well,
I was wondering if you
American enlisted
story.
Men will sell anything to anyone, which is why we're hemorrhaging M16s out of National Guard armories and stuff like that. The neo-Nazis in America have discovered, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so there are, I think, some very destructive tendencies of the Islamic radicalists to use white neo-Nazis as cover and so forth. And they're forming some alliances. I don't have a lot of direct information on this, but I have heard an extremely good lecture by Tom Copeland. You might try and Google. It may even be on my website. But Tom Copeland from LexisNexis has done an excellent lecture on ties between white extremists in the United States and enemies of the United States of Arabic or Islamic origin. The second thing, I will tell you two other things. One, the Oklahoma City bombing was a much larger network of co-conspirators than the U.S. government wants you to know, my opinion. And two, I gave like 19 speeches across the country in the aftermath of that for the American Foreign Relations Committee, AFCR or something. And I was stunned to find that there are an awful lot of Americans that really hate our government. And these are reasonable, middle-class, medical, loyal. I mean, I don't talk to anybody above, you know, middle class or below middle class And these are people that are very reasonable and sane. And they think the federal government is a really big part of the problem. And I think libertarians are gaining ground west of the Mississippi. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that Joel Garrow, whose wonderful book, Nine Nations in North America, set the stage for us fragmenting into nine nations. But I do believe that there is a tendency in the world to go back toward fragmentation along logical regional lines. And I agree with Ralph Peters. We need to reconstruct Africa and Arabia along ethnic and tribal lines rather than colonial lines that were arbitrarily set.
Can I ask one more
question? Yes, sir, of course. I have nothing to do between now and 10 in the morning. Actually, between now and 8 in the morning.
I was wondering if you support Denis Kucinich's proposition to establish a Department for Peace.
The short answer is yes, but that is a cop-out. What he really needs to do is make the Department of State and the Department of Defense and the Department of Justice and the rest of the government work as they're supposed to. Right now, in Iraq, the only people doing their job are the troops that are dying and bleeding every day. The rest of the U.S. government is out to lunch.
Thanks.
What's your viewpoint on Fox News?
I actually tune into Fox News. I was banned from Fox News after I said we're not fighting a global war on terror. That's just a pretext. They didn't like that. Fox News and this Ann Coulter. Actually, there's one book I reviewed called Strategery. And I'll tell you what, the idiocy of the ideological right has to be seen and felt to be believed. I mean, these people are nuts. And I'm just absolutely stunned. I mean, there's a major coalition between the Jews and the evangelical Christians. They've actually got a multi-million dollar program to grow the perfect red calf, which is like the signal that shit's going to happen. And I'm absolutely convinced there's a branch in the Mossad. They've done this twice now. And at the very last minute, a little white hair has appeared. And I'm absolutely convinced there's a Mossad branch that is responsible for taking chlorine to one hair on this calf right before it gets to where we need to be. These people are lunatics. And they're in power.
You mentioned the importance of citizen intelligence, and I wonder if at one point you become concerned on creating an Orwellian world in which half the citizenry is somehow informing on another half.
One of the problems we ran into in the Phoenix program in Vietnam is that people were reporting on people in order to kill people they owed money to. Thank you very much. I like the Google attitude, which is that the answer to dangerous information is more information. One of the reasons I believe that we need to evaluate information from the bottom up is that the FBI has no clue whether Aunt Matilda is a credible story or whatever, Joe Bob, whatever. But I think at the neighborhood level, you end up knowing each other. And I think that citizen intelligence is really, I mean, it's like Jamestown. He who does not work does not eat. He who does not think, fuck off. So we need to get to this point where we're all a vibrant hive. And that includes, by the way, swarming threats to the hive. I mean, this whole air transportation thing is bullshit. We get it. Okay, next asshole that pulls out a box cutter is dead. Okay, it ain't going to happen. So how about the New York ferry, 7,000 at rush hour? That's next. You got to keep an eye. But I think this cell phone thing, 119, 114, I think that's part of the solution. And I think you also, it's like karma points. You know, eventually you learn who the lunatics are and you start toning them down. I believe in citizen intelligence. I believe in morality. I believe that inherently people are good if they know they're being watched. So it's better than what we've got now. 50% of the dots that will prevent the next 9/11 are going to come from bottom up, from cops and citizens on the street. The problem right now is that when they call the FBI takes their number and throws it in the bin. Okay. The FBI could care less what citizens are thinking. My second book is online for free. Also, my briefs, by the way. I mean, I have a whole bunch of briefs on the new craft of intelligence, new rules for the new craft of intelligence. They're all on my website for free. Yes, sir.
Yes. During your talk, I noticed that you mentioned the term Wahhabism, mm-hmm. the extremist Wahhabis. Looks like you understand the difference between Shiites, Sunnis, and Wahhabis. But the problem is, I noticed that the American people don't understand these differences. And the media is also portraying Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and Hezbollah as people of the same school, while they are, in fact, opponents, or Hezbollah is actually leaning towards Hamas rather than Al-Qaeda. Why is that created in the media, and why are who benefits from deceiving people into thinking that they are actually the same?
One of the problems that we've discovered is that, and this is well documented in a book called The Price of Loyalty and the 1% Doctrine and so forth, Dick Cheney shut out the bureaucracy. The State Department knows the difference between Shiites and Sunnis, and they know that there's one in the majority that's close to Iran. This information, perhaps because Dick Cheney did not wish it to move, this information did not get to George Bush. He is documented as having ordered the war on Iraq, not realizing that he was doing Iran a favor. And as far as terrorism goes, never underestimate the simplicity of the U.S. government. In fact, CIA has closed the bin Laden shop. They've given up. That just boggles the mind. I think bin Laden is an honored guest of the Pakistani government, as is the nuclear scientist. So what it boils down to is that you get the government you deserve. You can't have a smart government when you have a dumb nation, and right now we have a really dumb nation.
One more question. Where do you see the American government moving towards the Saudi textbooks? I'm actually Saudi, and I have studied these religious textbooks, and I'm a Shiite. I belong to the minority Shiites in Saudi Arabia. And I remember one of the things that the minorities suffer is that when we take tests, we have to answer questions that put us in hell. I mean, when they ask you a question, where do the Shiites belong in the afterlife? We have to write, we go to hell.
You don't get the virgins?
I'm sorry?
You don't get the virgins?
No, unfortunately not.
By the way, I'm curious. I'm told that one translation of the 79 virgins is actually 79 dates. Now, is it dates or virgins?
I have no idea about that.
What is it? Raisins? So it's raisins, not virgins.
I think they're virgins.
Okay. Virgin grapes or? White grapes? Yeah, I've heard the white grapes version. Which is it?
I'm sorry. I don't understand.
Is it virgins or white grapes? That you get if you're a martyr?
I don't know. I'm not sure, really.
Okay.
I can't answer that.
No
yeah.
sweat.
Yeah, but where do you see the government going towards these textbooks, which are giving birth to more terrorists every day?
The U.S. government is stupid, okay? In Iraq, for example, we're dealing right now with the fact, and I'm going to have to go to the bathroom soon. In Iraq, we're dealing with the fact. This is more information than you need, but I have a small gluttonous throat that needs to be constantly lubricated. In Iraq, we have written tribal histories that have not been digitized. In Iraq, the biggest source of tension between the Sunnis and the Shiites at the neighborhood level is over property ownership. But when you open a property book, it's like the Dead Sea Scrolls. It actually fragments. And so the U.S. government isn't paying attention. They don't care. You're absolutely right. The U.S. government is so out of it. I mean, Paul Bremer will go down his history as one of the most destructive people on the planet. And also, maybe this is his intent, and I'm going to stop with this, and I'll come back if you want me to, or I can go into a smaller session. But Paul Bremer hasn't accounted for $18 out of $20 billion that he was given in cash. You know. All right, I'll be right back. All right. This is, someone's given me notes. I know everything. I don't, but I have an opinion on everything. And then takeaways. Buy my books on Amazon. Government sucks. Everyone equals stupid. Circumlocucate all questions. Wikis will not fucking solve everything. They're controlled by morons. Speaker is short-sighted. Okay. Every government, and I mean, there's no one else on the planet that has spent 18 years fighting for open source intelligence. Americans will change. Yes? Americans, what we're going to do, this is the last split, and then if a few people want to have, you know, two or three drinks, that'll be great, because I love to have two or three drinks before I go to bed, but that's it. This guy has an answer for everything. Do you guys think I have an answer for everything? Huh? Oh, fuck. Was this my son? He's walking home. I love him. You know, I mean, you can't... I can't... What? Are you kidding me? He discovered his own mind at the age of 12, and I've been helpless ever since. Yes, sir.
What you said is... much of what you're saying is tragically true. There's no doubt any seasoned observer here in New York viewing what is going on, I am forced to agree with certainly over 90% of what you're saying. But a major reason why things have gotten to the extent that they are now is because of the ineffective and...
Can you turn that down? You're being disruptive. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry for the interruption.
Okay. Has been the ineffective and really erratic behavior of people that normally would be...
Hey, by the way, somewhere in this building, two people are having sex under a table, and I wish I were there. But this is what has the security guys in a tizzy. Go on. I'm not smiling.
A little side entertainment there. All right. What I'm saying is that most of the activist organizations here have begun to... behave in such an ineffective and erratic way, and it's very, very difficult to believe that this is by chance. For example, I've lived in New York all my life. There have been protests on foreign policy all my life. Why is that there is never a protest at 68th Street and Park Avenue, or outside the Trilateral Commission, or near the American Friends of the Bilderberg, or near the Lucis Trust? I mean, you see, everybody here is treating symptomology. Nobody's treating cause. Nobody is addressing the NGOs and the central organizations that are generating these policies. It isn't the State Department. The policy is basically made in New York City. It goes down to Foggy Bottom, it's stamped, and then, oh, it's American policy. But it isn't American policy. It's these characters on the Upper East Side.
I agree with that.
And look, unless people really get outside those buildings and yell bloody murder, things are going to continue to deteriorate. You cannot have, you cannot have organizations. You saw what happened at the 2000 Millennium Meeting at the United Nations. Nobody showed up to talk on virtually anything. There were busloads of people that came to town. They were brought into an auditorium. Then they were told to get back on the buses and leave. The World Economic Forum, 300 people showed up. Remember how many people were supposed to show up? Surprise, only 300 people showed up. How does that happen? The entire protest industry, or the entire activist community, has sunk to a level of such erraticism and such ineffectiveness that, of course, these people feel that they can come out and do whatever they want because there's no effective public response. Why are there no protests outside of 68th Street and Park Avenue ever?
Okay, got it. Couple of comments. One, I think that Lori Wallach is onto something. Two, I will refer you to a book by Bill Moyer called Doing Democracy, in which he talks about the eight stages. And most interesting to me, because this was meaningful to me at a point in my life where I thought I had failed, stage number five is where you think you failed. And it's kind of a period of quiet. But in fact, things are starting to gel and others are starting to spontaneously move in that direction. What I think has changed in the last couple of years is the ability to share information and mobilize people using handheld devices and lists and digests and so forth. I mean, in Kuwait, the women are organizing spontaneous demonstrations by cell phone. So I understand and agree with all that you've said. In fact, I would say that there is, in fact, an American banking group. There are a couple of angles on this. One is that I think that the Rothschilds were able to transport to the United States of America their concept of managing the country as if we're all serfs. We're all peasants, okay? And we just exist to kind of feed the system. I think that's there. I also think that you've got some extraordinarily unethical people on Wall Street. I refer you to Lewis's Liar's Poker, where he talks about exploding the clients, okay? Wall Street will play the game for themselves in the early days, and then they'll sell out, and they'll let you take the loss. Finally, Bill Clinton certainly discovered that Wall Street was calling the shots on his economy, and today we have the chairman of Goldman Sachs as Secretary of Treasury. This is not good news. You're absolutely right. Things are in a very, very dire state of affairs. But I have to feel that sometime in the next 7 years, we're going to see a major turning point. All of my reading, and I haven't read everything, I've only read about 3,000 books in 10 years, all of my reading suggests that we're about to move from a top-down, unilateral, secretive decision-making system to a bottom-up, multicultural, open-source intelligence. Drink! Okay, open source intelligence system. I believe this passionately. So, can't do better than that. You're right on the problems, but I think you may be too pessimistic, and maybe I'm wrong, but it gives me hope. Yes, sir.
Okay, and now for something completely different. I have two legs. But on
two what?
Legs.
You have two legs.
Spam, Monty Python.
What don't I understand?
Monty Python.
Oh.
But in all honesty, as we go on, or for something completely different, actually one of the items that is pretty much a cornerstone behind your open source intelligence is pretty much news media. And my, or pretty much using that to get an idea as far as what's going on.
That's the shallowest part of it, but go on.
Oh, sorry. But the question actually comes towards maybe not so much from the mainstream media perspective, as I'm aware that there are some grassroots organizations along lines of like indie media, but are where they actually go and actually investigate the real news. But as far as, or one perspective thereof, but when it comes to mainstream, I mean, I know there have been a couple of episodes in the Times where, at least recently with the wiretapping issue, where it kind of spawned such a backlash as far as the First Amendment rights issue goes, that we've got members within the Congress and even up in our executive and legislative branches to the point where they actually want to restrict that kind of our freedom even more so and actually censure the Times and also other forms of the free press. And I was kind of curious as far as your views or insights on such censorships or...
Okay. Well, let's take that from the field back. John Fialka from the Wall Street Journal wrote a wonderful book called Hotel Warriors. And Robert Young Pelton, who does the book World's Most Dangerous Places and a Discovery show, Come Back Alive, it's well documented that not only the media but the embassies are essentially relying on third and fourth hand information. They haven't actually put their boots in the ground and their eyes on the target. So take that outside of a few exceptional journalists like Robert Kaplan, Cy Hirsch, and so forth. Second, We don't have a free media. In the run-up to the war in Iraq, there were a number of organizations and individuals ready to pay $100,000 in cash for full-page ads in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, and so forth, with very correct information against the war. And these corporately owned newspapers rejected those ads. And when I spoke with Alvin Toffler, and I mentioned him the other day, but when I spoke with Toffler, I asked, you know, what's our biggest problem? He says, our biggest problem is the collapse of all of our institutions. And he specifically mentioned the New York Times as no longer being reliable. And I agree with that. And the Bush posturing against the New York Times, I think that's as much show as anything else, because he had Judith Miller in the New York Times. And Judith Miller was a direct asset shared by Israel and the Americans and the B'nai B'rith. And she did a lot of damage. And the Times guys knew it. They tried to kind of block her in and stuff. Now, I see all these problems, but I also see hope. I mean, Trippi has written his book. There's several books that I've reviewed on the new media. I think we are all agreed that blogging is passé now. It's no longer cool. What is cool is starting to set up distributed networks that can create structured answers to questions that are authoritative. Now, let me address open source. The media is the shallowest level of open source. That's where FIBIS, that's where the Foreign Broadcast Information Service stops. Okay? Below the media, you have books, which FIBIS doesn't read. The United States of America killed the Joint Publications Research Service, which used to find and translate important books in all languages for the Library of Congress and for the general distribution. We don't do that anymore. We don't read books in the intelligence community. Dissertations. Most knowledge starts as a dissertation. We don't do foreign dissertations. We don't even do American dissertations. Okay? And finally, you have what I call experts and observers. I was stunned 5 years ago to learn that the vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council didn't know what citation analysis is. Okay, there's the Social Science Citation Index and the Science Citation Index created by Eugene Garfield, an American hero, in the Institute of Scientific Information. And I can identify, for $1,000, I can identify the top 100 people in the world based on publications on anything. And through them, I can identify the top 100 people who are unpublished in the NGOs, governments, and so forth. CIA doesn't do citation analysis. And this is amazing, in part because they're not allowed to talk to people who don't have clearances, okay, which is stupid. So experts, and particularly foreign experts, are absolutely vital. And finally, you have observers. We monitor sermons around the world. And we do it in many different ways, but mostly indirectly, because now the sermons are getting smart and they've got detectors to find tape recorders, and so it's getting harder to get actual tape recordings of the sermons. But sermons, student papers, lectures by teachers, Chamber of Commerce meetings where local problems are discussed, none of this is coming into the United States system. None of it. All right, we are at a very superficial level, and nothing pisses me off more than CNN in my elevator. You know, I want you to point out, I don't think my son actually drew this. He's a much better artist, but my brains are coming out of my ass here. Thank you, whoever shared this with me. So, another question?
For how much we've been bashing the mental capacity of conservatives so far, I feel like it's something we should give them respect for, is their ability to rally both their own supporters and the swing vote. I mean, they put billions of dollars each year into think tanks and into getting people into the proper position so that they can continue to control the political landscape. Progressives, meanwhile, I think they don't have any sort of infrastructure like that, and waste most of their money on ineffectual NGOs, that kind of thing.
Well, George Soros wasted his money. Yeah. I mean, Soros wasn't even close to putting his money wisely into American politics.
So I suppose what I'm asking is, would you blame the ineffectual elections in this country and just the generally dismal landscape of politics, would you blame that on the population being stupid, or would you blame that on basically having one-party politics where the Democrats can't get their shit together?
Well, I don't have all the answers. I'll speculate a little bit. First off, there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans other than that the Democrats are more inept. They're both corrupt. I mean, one reason I certainly don't want to impeach George Bush is because Nancy Pelosi in the White House gives me nightmares. I sat next to her on an airplane once for 6 hours. There wasn't a thought that came out of her head. I think that there's a problem, actually, with what is maybe called third generation rich or whatever. We're coming off some good times, and in those good times, we lost sight of citizenship. We lost sight of engagement. We lost sight of caring. It's become a cheating, selfish culture, by and large, present company accepted. Citizens abdicated their role. Now, I don't know, I presume all of you know that the League of Women Voters was thrown out of the debate business specifically to shut out third, fourth, and fifth party candidates. And although we had a remarkable slate a few years ago, one of the first things we have to do is get back to multi-party debates. In fact, I want to take it one level lower. I think we absolutely have to force the presidents to pick their cabinet in advance of the election. America is too complex to be run by a white boy and his friends. Okay? We have to have cabinet-level debates, at least defense, state, and justice. So my bottom line is we've lost it. You know, we've had it good. We've had it good enough so we didn't care how much they were stealing in Wall Street because we had our cheap gas and cheap beer and all this stuff. Someone else can have this. I don't drink beer. It bloats me. So I don't have any answers other than I think we are going to see a couple of disasters that will be shocking to us. And I also believe, like the New York blackouts and like combat, people come together under stress. And under stress, the elites are not going to help us. We're going to help ourselves. And that's as good as I can do. What? Yeah, Katrina was a disaster. That was really horrible. And it's unfortunate that most of the people left behind were black. And that those are the most corrupt cops on the planet. Yeah, I like Pelton. And in fact, these cops, I mean, there are a number of books in the literature that suggest that Brown and Root is a CIA subsidiary that is also running drugs into America through all of the construction equipment that's coming back and also through the oil rigs off the coast of New Orleans. All right, another question.
In reference to power through economic control. And
let's make this. Is there someone behind you? All right, these are the last two questions.
All right. I'll try to make this quick since people can't make
No, that's
point
fine.
Today.
I'm not worried about time, but let's just stop for the group with these last two questions, and then if anyone else has private questions, I'll speak for
anyway,
a drink.
Gentleman had mentioned the Bilderbergs. Now, there's obviously a proven link between, you know, economics and power, and he controls the money, controls the politics and whatnot. How do you see groups like the Bilderbergs and whatnot, how do you see them even supporting something like open source intelligence, OSI?
They're scared to death of it.
Well, yeah, to try to empower the people from the bottom up. I mean,
look,
they're going to try to stop you and throw as much money as they can at it.
Well, I think I'm too small to be noticed yet, but one of the things that's interesting is they only have power because we let them have power. If you look at the pension funds and the unions and the opportunities for popular power, these guys are living on our backs because we let them live on our backs. If you stop buying all this shit that they're selling, and if you take your money out of stocks and put it into gold, and if you basically stop playing their game, that's one answer. The other answer is I think that there will be a come-to-Jesus meeting in 10 to 15 years where a lot of the stuff that has been stolen from us will be retrievable. I see no reason why we can't take back all of Bill Gates' fortune except for $1 billion. I think Huh? He's not donating it. He's helping a few syphilitic Indian guys who are queer for each other use condoms. Okay. I am not impressed. Syphilitic guys is a drink term now? All right, last question.
In terms of journalistic quality, what are your thoughts on National Public Radio? And if you had the chance, given your open source intelligent budget that you would like to have, would you throw more funding their way?
I will tell you that I used to have a great deal of respect for National Public Radio until I found out that it worked for Otto Reich. They are actively censored by the U.S. government. I used to be a regular guest on NPR until one day I pointed out that more Palestinians were getting killed than Jews. I was instantly banned from NPR. I will support NPR, provided that it moves under the Broadcasting Board of Governors, and the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which is outgoing public diplomacy, and the Open Source Agency, which is incoming information or reality, are both completely independent of the executive in every way, shape, and form. All right. God bless you all. If someone wants to buy me 3 vodkas, I'll talk and drink for another half hour, and then I'm going to bed.